C1B 1 and 2. Chapter 10. Science of Being, Part 1 and 2. The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook, Our Way of Life. Number 1A.
We start today with the chapter Science of Being. It is the 10th chapter in the textbook, and it has within the structure of the textbook, it has the place value of Christianity reflecting the Christ. What does that mean? Christianity, as we have seen, is at the focal point of ideas, and in Christian Science, therefore, means the realm of ideas. We have seen when Christianity is looked at from the point of view of the Word, in the chapter Creation, that it has to do with accepting that realm of ideas. The Word is always to approach to God, the accepting God, and so we saw in the chapter on Creation how Mrs. Eddy presented through the first 3-4 subject of mind, spirit, soul, and principle, really the realm of ideas. And then in the 5th, 6th, and 7th subject, she showed how we can accept that realm of ideas and make creation our own and to be that creation. Now, when the Word has stated the nature of the of creation, we can see that now Christianity also must reflect the Christ, not only the Word. And alone the very fact that we are thinking structurally and very systematically, we really can arrive at a new insight, namely that therefore the realm of ideas must have a Christ. This is not always seen by the students. Usually the term Christ applies to them to God, that God has a Christ, and that that Christ has been symbolized through Jesus Christ, and that the Christ is that power that comes from God to men. That's the true sense of the Christ as the Christ. But now we also have to see that Christianity itself has a Christ, and so we can calculate what that must be. We can spiritually reckon now that ideas that constitute creation have a Christ, have a saving power, so that ideas in their Christ office are saving the world from whatever needs to be saved. And this is the subject of the 10th chapter. Not to show really that God has a Christ, but that ideas have a Christ. So we come to the power of manifestation, Christ, of what? Of the realm of ideas. Seeing that ideas save, help, resolve what needs to be resolved. In this way we have focused on the whole chapter, but that whole chapter is very long. It has about 80 pages, so we can ask ourselves, what can be in those 80 pages always to show that ideas have a Christ? In your study material that you have in front of you, you see on page 2 that when we consider the standpoint of the chapter, A, Christianity reflecting the Christ, to see that ideas have a Christ. And then in B, I give you first an overall layout of the chapter. And it is this that we have first to keep in mind. So you see again, we start out with that question, the following question. You have read the chapter Science of Being many, many, many times. Hundreds of times, perhaps. You have read it sincerely, with deep devotion, with a deep desire to understand what is in the pages. And I can bet anything that nobody of all those 100,000 or perhaps even millions of Christian Scientists who have read that chapter could tell me what is in that chapter. Now this has to be rectified. Why was it not possible to read a chapter 100 times by intelligent people and not know what they have been reading? Because their approach to the text was atomistically, and therefore an interest in understanding sentences and individual sentences. The second reason is because they do not know the tonality of the 7 synonymous terms. They can therefore not differentiate between tones and therefore between subjects that are presented. It all looks the same. Only then, when one has cultured one's consciousness in the 7 synonymous terms, this chapter can be read in an orderly sequence. So order, too, is a means of understanding. I come back to what I said right at the beginning of this session, that understanding is a matter of differentiation. Spirit imparts understanding. Spirit imparts that understanding by diversifying, classifying, individualizing all ideas. We only can get there for understanding of a text if we approach the text in that way, where we have a differentiated, classified, therefore structured consciousness. And so, if we have here a beautiful example of a very long, very important chapter, which we just couldn't get hold of, we couldn't see its message, I want to try to show you within a few days that when you leave here, you have a very clear concept of what is in that chapter, so that you can drive home or fly home and have the textbook shut in your traveling cases and know exactly the reasoning that Mrs. Eddy has by going through those 80 pages. You just have it right in your fingertips. How is that possible? Not by memorizing, but by culturing ourselves out of that atomistic approach into a structural consciousness. And structure is always simple because it has just a few categories. And what we have to know is those few categories about which a chapter teaches, and just see that lay out in those categories. A structure can only be easily understood if one approaches it structurally through a hierarchy of levels. The hierarchical approach. A hierarchical approach means that one first approaches the very top concept and then goes further down, always to a broader and wider level, and touches so from the top of a pyramid, so to say, always broader levels until one is right down on the ground. The ground would be the whole text of the chapter. If we start with the hierarchies of this chapter, naturally you see the very top would be Christianity as the Christ. That would be the top stone, that cornerstone on the top of the pyramid, which says the whole chapter, over the whole chapter flows one tone that is never left, that goes right through the whole text, is to show that ideas have a Christ. From there, we go to the second level of the hierarchy and come to 3 parts that constitute the whole chapter. When one reads that chapter spiritually, with tonality, one can't help feeling very clearly that Mrs. Eddy has three parts in it. Those three parts you have summarized on the study material there on page 2 under B, the layout of the chapter, showing that part 1 tells us what? That part 1 tells us that ideas dissolve beliefs. You see in it the Christ dissolves the counterfeit. That's the office of the Christ. And you see in it Christianity, again, namely ideas dissolve beliefs. So again you have the first level of hierarchy in it, namely that ideas have a Christ. But now in the first part, this concept is applied to dissolving beliefs. Whereas the second part, as you see, I come back to the first one afterwards, the second part shows that the belief that man is immortal yields to the fact that man is immortal. I could have put perhaps the sentence the other way round in order to bring it out clearer, that ideas dissolve, that ideas have a Christ, by saying here ideas is symbolized by immortal men, by the idea of immortal men, and that idea of immortal men has a Christ and dissolves the belief that we are immortal. I could have put it that way too. Then you would have seen again the first hierarchical level translated to that second level of showing more specific how an idea dissolves or has a Christ. Here it is specifically applied to the idea man. Man has a Christ and therefore dissolves the belief of mortal men. And then she comes to a third part, the platform in which she shows that ideas have a Christ. Again, in which way? That she shows ideas constitute a calculus of ideas, and that therefore ideas have a very dynamic nature to dissolve really a false calculus. So if you keep these three parts apart, so that you always see the great picture, then you have already a great overall view what is happening within that chapter. I go through these three parts again and elaborate a little bit so that it may become even more tangible. Part one, which shows that ideas dissolve beliefs, is actually showing, so to say, the theory of that point of ideas having a Christ. It depicts in a very general, I would say even theoretical way, the way that ideas have a Christ and therefore dissolve universal, collective, individual beliefs per se. Whereas the second part goes to the concrete problem of being and shows how ideas resolve concrete error. Those two parts are, so to say, like those 2 feet of the angel in the Apocalypse, where it is said that the angel had 2 feet, the right foot was the dominant power, was standing up on the sea as elementary latent error, standing on invisible error, so to say, on that invisible error that is the source of all visible error, whereas the other foot, the left foot, therefore a secondary power was exercised over what she calls visible error and audible sin, therefore over concrete error. So the first part and the second part have naturally one thing in common, namely that ideas have a Christ, and that ideas therefore are saving, but that which differentiates the first part from the second part is that in the first part ideas dissolve latent error, dissolve really invisible error, just the belief, eternal belief, that there is error. It dissolves that universe of illusions, whereas the second part tackles the concrete error. It tackles really the whole question of civilization, starting from Adam and showing how through the last 6,000 years, so to say, the concrete error symbolized by Adam and the Adam dream had to yield step by step to the true idea of man. So that second part gives us a historical overall view, survey from Adam up to divine science. Actually, she gives that history even further than now, with a view into the 7,000-year period, into the millennium that is coming, and is showing very clearly the spiritual steps of how the true idea of being is dissolving the false sense of Adam man and is bringing to the light the true idea man. So we have those two very different parts, and when we go through the first part you will see that everything is presented rather in an abstract, theoretical way, just giving the wonderful theory of how the seven resolve the counterfeit of the seven, each time through seven subtones. But then suddenly from one paragraph to the other, where she changes from the first part to the second part, that suddenly she begins to show now how this fundamental theoretical presentation of the ideas having a Christ has been brought out in human history, in the history of mankind, in civilization, as showing that the idea was always at work to bring us out of the darkness of the Adam dream, always higher and higher and higher up, then to the age of Jesus, then to the age of Christian Science, and then a great presentation of what is coming, namely the age of divine science. And when she has presented that, then she has an abrupt break and gives the platform with the 32 points in which she presents really the modus operandi of that idea, why an idea has a Christ and why an idea operates as the Christ to dissolve illusions, and gives therefore there the scientific, the timeless sense of the operation of the calculus of ideas. So can you somehow picture now already the top of this pyramid? On the top, really the fundamental point, ideas have a Christ, then showing in which way have ideas a Christ, and you come to the second layer in the pyramid with three parts, and says, ideas have a Christ in which way? In the first part, that idea dissolves illusions. In the second part, that it dissolves concrete error. And in the third part, that it has within itself a calculus that is timeless. So that we would already have some kind of a structure that would give us a lead and would somehow sort things out in our consciousness. The chapter is called Science of Being, and we must see that because in English a title is always written in capital letters, that we do not misinterpret that title. That title, Being, is not a capital Being. It is therefore not the Science of Being with a capital B, It's a science of being with a small b, which means she does not present the science of God, who is the one infinite being, but she presents the science of being, small b, which is the realm of ideas, the beingness of the whole universe. Therefore, the focal point is on Christianity and not on the Word. Having seen this, we also realize that when one reads that chapter, that various subjects come up side by side. And one of the subjects is really the question that comes up all the time, what is the nature of reality? So, running through the text is that question which we know so much, namely, is life, substance, and intelligence in matter, or is it spiritual? In no other chapter, as in this chapter, this question comes up over and over and over. Quite unexpectedly, within the flow of the subject, she will bring up that tone, always asking now, is being, small b, is that being a being that is material or spiritual? And being is therefore not an organic being, but an organic being. Therefore, is life in matter, or is life spiritual? Is intelligence in matter, or is intelligence spiritual? Is substance in matter, or is substance spiritual? So that when we read the text through, we will always hear somehow that other question coming in, that is in that pyramid, which says there is another layer, another tone, another instrument in this orchestra that plays always a melody of its own, namely always bringing the subject down to the question, now, is reality really spiritual? Is reality material? Is life, substance, and intelligence material? Or is it spiritual? She uses those three terms mostly, sometimes only two or so, because she's very flexible in her language. But there are these three terms that she brings up in regard to is reality spirit or material. These three terms have a great Christ message, Christ tone within themselves. When we then once come to the chapter recapitulation and see how John Dolly brought out how the chapter on recapitulation is laid out, there you will see that those three great questions in recapitulation, what is substance, what is life, what is intelligence, are in that part of the Christ, symbolizing actually Christ as the Word, intelligence, Christ, as substance, Christ as Christianity, as life. Therefore, you have a whole range of Christ as the Word, Christ as the Christ, Christ as Christianity being brought out just through that great question, is life, substance, and intelligence material, or is it spiritual? So we will keep that tone in our synchronization, in that interpretation of the chapter also in mind.